Hi, I'm Jess.
And I'm Christine.
And welcome to another episode of Dose of Pharma. Today we are joined by not one, but two guests. So we'll be talking to Emily Opie, who is in her final year of pharma medicine and is working at Peninsula Health as a COVID concierge, as well as Chantel Turner, who started Turn Pharmacy Leadership, an organization that helps pharmacists improve their leadership skills and emotional intelligence. So today we'll be discussing something too many of us are all too familiar with, which is burnout, and we'll be going over how to identify and manage it. So to begin, let's have both of you tell us a bit about yourselves. So Chantel, would you like to answer first?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Chantel. I'm a pharmacist of, goodness, maybe about 15 years. Worked in community pharmacy for the vast majority of that, and in the last few years have stepped away from community pharmacy to focus on my business, Turn Pharmacy Leadership, and I also became a mum. My impetus for starting Turn Pharmacy Leadership was there are so many pharmacists in community pharmacy that love their job but aren't equipped with the skills to lead themselves and their teams in a way that doesn't result in burnout. So it's my job and my passion in my career now to help to optimize people's thought processes and time management skills for optimal well-being and to improve job satisfaction.
Yeah, learning to deal with burnout is definitely a skill you have to develop, which a lot of people don't realize.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, Emily, would you be able to give us a brief intro to yourself?
Yeah, definitely. I'm definitely not as experienced or exciting as Chantel, but I am currently a final year paramedicine student at Victoria University, doing that full time. I'm also working for Peninsula Health as part of the COVID surge. I'm a COVID concierge. So we basically deal with PPE spotting, making sure we have the correct people in the hospital, putting visitors inside and working on keeping everything safe while we're in this COVID pandemic. But that's what I do, and I'm trying to get through online uni and things like that. I'm sure a lot of people are.
Yeah, being third year uni, so final year of uni, it is definitely like a lot of stress, very risky time for burnout. So you definitely have to manage that very well.
For sure, definitely. Definitely experiencing that at the moment.
Yeah, so I guess we can jump right into, I guess, talking about burnout. I would love to know, what does it mean to be burnout, and what has your experiences been in getting burnt out? Maybe Emily, if you want to jump in first.
Yeah, definitely. For me, burnout is quite prevalent in my current everyday life, working full time as well as being at uni full time. For me, it really just feels like losing all motivation, feeling lethargic, tired all the time. It really has an effect on my mental health as well as my physical health as well. I do feel less able to get out of bed, not as confident going into work and dealing with the public, dealing with patients, feeling less confident with my uni work, just overworking so much that I feel anything I try to do doesn't turn out the way I want it. Definitely not positive things, but I think doing as much as I am, it's going to eventually lead to a little bit of burnout.
I was just going to say, you just said that you do a lot, Emily. So is that part of, as you said, you're eventually going to feel burnt out? Is that because you're taking on too much?
I think definitely I'm taking on a little bit too much, working 6 days a week. Especially in the healthcare sector at the moment, as many people know, it is extremely busy. Everyone, clinical, non-clinical staff in hospitals, pre-hospitally, out of hospitals, everyone's working double shifts, everyone's working long days, trying to do that on top of uni, on top of homework, on top of family life, on top of trying to exercise, eat well, focus on other things. It ends up really stacking on, and a lot of things kind of build up.
Yeah, that definitely sounds like a lot to balance, because you feel obligated to be doing all these different things. So it's really hard to then step back and be like, oh, I can't take on something else right now. Like, I've reached my limit. And that's a very hard thing to learn to acknowledge a lot of the time.
Definitely. Could not agree more. You really do feel obliged to take on more things, because if we can work, I feel very lucky that I can, so I'll take it. But it's hard trying to, I'm applying for jobs next year as a graduate, and it's hard to find time to sit down and write about my applications, to do things like that, because I'm just working all the time, trying to do the best I can to support the community during this pandemic. But it does add up a lot, and it is detrimental to yourself for sure.
How about you, Chantel? What do you, like, you think is burnout, and how have you experienced it?
Sure. So for me, burnout is, as Emily was explaining, that physical, emotional, and mental fatigue to the point of what feels like no return. And it does present in a way that can be so stressful to begin with, and it snowballs really, really quickly to the point where it just feels overwhelming. For me, I had a slightly different story, but it aligns with Emily's as well, in the sense I was a pharmacy manager. I had always been very good at my job, high achieving and prior, and I was very proud of what I brought to the team, and felt that the quality of my work directly reflected the quality of me as a person. And in doing that, it opened me up to feeling that moral obligation all the time to do more, to be the yes person, to be the answer to everyone's problems, questions, or otherwise, which inevitably meant that there was a little bit less time for me and myself and my mental and physical well-being on a daily basis. So I kept taking on more and more and more, until one day I had I call it my early midlife crisis, where I kind of woke up and went, oh my God, who am I without work? Who would I be? What would I say to someone if they asked me who I am and what I do if I couldn't say I'm a pharmacist? And I couldn't answer the question. So burnout for me ended up in almost a sense of loss of self, which was quite confronting to deal with. And so from that early midlife crisis, I then learnt the importance of managing my time and my ability to say no, and look at how to engage in my work and my home life in a much more sustainable way.
That's really interesting. I think how you mentioned at one point you just wanted to keep saying yes to everything, I definitely resonate with that. So I feel like I'm the type of person just wants to always be doing things, always working, and always saying yes to things. But yeah, I guess it is important to recognize that after a long time of saying yes to everything, you will eventually burn out. I guess you mentioned that it kind of burnout starts, I guess, small, but then over time it will snowball into something bigger. I guess there's some things either you experienced or you think are the first signs and symptoms very early on of burnout that people may, I guess, not recognize at the time?
That's a really great question. In my experience, and in also talking to others, I find that burnout starts really subtly, in that it might be a change in sleep patterns. So whether it's wanting to sleep considerably more, or even a little bit more or a little bit less, having trouble getting to sleep. It can be when self-care starts to lapse ever so slightly. So it goes from you have a cup of coffee every morning, and then all of a sudden it's two a couple of days a week, and then every day of the week. Or it's the chocolate bar that was once on a lunch break and now happens to be every day, or there's the red frogs next to the computer. And I guess that one there is a personal experience. I think also in other things, it's decision fatigue. Making those really simple everyday decisions, like what are you going to have for dinner, becomes exceptionally hard, because we take on so many decisions on a daily basis that we just, we we lose our capacity to actually have a clear thought. I think it also is that scatterbrain feeling and loss of direction as well, which can happen really early on in the piece. And that's what I find also does really snowball. You start going, oh, I've got to be here and here and here and here, and losing that ability to have some clear strategic thought processes does lead us down the rabbit hole to snowballing into impacting our mental health or impacting our physical health as well.
Yeah, they're definitely like little things you don't often notice. Like, you don't take the step back to like reflect enough on how you're acting and what's going on to be like, oh, maybe something's up. Like, and often like you probably end up blaming yourself, being like, oh, why am I like eating more chocolate than normal? I shouldn't be doing this. Or like having that like self like hatred almost, like probably not that extreme, but being like, why am I acting like this? Which makes it even harder as well.
I think that's a good point too, Jessica, because we make so many excuses for ourselves, you know, oh, I'm just got poor eating habits, or oh, I'm just a bit tired, or I just can't bother concentrating today. But when we step back and look at that big picture and combine all those little individual things together in the environment, the situational context we're in, that's when we can start to identify the signs of burnout a bit quicker than looking at them and providing an excuse for each little thing on its own.
So Emily, have you experienced similar signs and symptoms, or have you experienced burnout a little bit differently to that?
Oh, for sure. The too many chocolate bars really hits home to me every day at work, every day. They are very similar. Sleeping patterns change dramatically for me when I burn out. I don't sleep as well, and that affects my work. I'm not working as well if I'm not rested. I definitely feel those to the extreme. I feel those exact same symptoms, get lethargic. I just don't have motivation to do what I need to do, and everything turns out not as good as it should. So in the end, it really doesn't benefit my schooling. It doesn't benefit my patients that I deal with. Really, it's a terrible, terrible cycle that just keeps on happening and doesn't fix itself in the end.
Yeah. So I guess experiencing burnout, what are the some things that you did to overcome when you were going through the burnout periods, or I guess if currently through the COVID burnout period as well? Maybe Emily, if you want to jump in.
Yeah, definitely. I've been trying to instill some new habits into my life. I'm trying to eat better, have meal plan more, have more things ready to go, easy access when I have to go to work, trying to cut down on shifts if I can, doing less of saying yes. You need to put time to yourself, time to going for walks. I've been going on walks with my dog often, trying to just have me time more, and knowing that it's not just, I need to be there for myself, not just my patients and everyone else. Trying to have that time just to yourself, watch a movie, go for a walk, say no sometimes has really helped me.
Yeah. I guess it probably takes some time to get better at saying no. It's something that's really hard to do.
Definitely. It is very difficult at the beginning, and you do feel obligated to say yes, and you feel like maybe this is going to look bad on me at work, or I'm not going to get shifts in the future. But you need to understand that there's always someone else there to be able to work as well, and you're not doing any harm to anyone by helping yourself.
Yeah, that's great insight, Emily. Thank you. For me, self-care is, and preventing or minimizing the risk of burnout, is about really having some honest conversations with myself about what is nourishing me and what's depleting me. So bringing it back to two really simple questions, to identify how my actions in my day are impacting on my overall well-being. And then from having those honest conversations with myself and not denying what I'm feeling and giving myself excuses, I can then really action out what's required in relation to self-care, because as we know, our lives are so fluid and sometimes we really do just need to cram for exams, or we need to, you know, pick up an extra couple of shifts because other people are sick or holidays. So having that conversation and being able to identify where there's opportunity for self-care gains is really important. So that to me can look like time out. It could be rest, it could be time with friends. It could also be actually blocking out some time to work on something I need to do for work to get it off my plate. Because sometimes we go, oh, I need a rest. But if we actually just allocated some time to work on the thing that's cluttering our mind most, it may help to free that space up as well. So really listening intuitively to what I need mentally and physically really guides what I need to do to keep out of that burnout zone.
Yeah, self-care is definitely essential to prevent, and then once you're experiencing burnout, to try and resolve that. Mm. So self-care in like the dictionary is defined as something that's like necessary to sustain life and health. Whereas in contrast to that, in social media, it's very much promoted as spending money on material goods and services with the goal of like treating yourself. So like, what are your opinions on the contrast of these ideas, and like, what does self-care look like in your life to, like, you've talked about that a little bit, but could you elaborate that on that a bit more?
Sure. So as I just mentioned, self-care for me is really about identifying what I need physically and emotionally to perform optimally in all components of my life, in all facets of my life, and having honest conversations around that. And I think that probably speaks really to that definition, the dictionary definition of self-care. I still feel sometimes part of my self-care is treating myself to material goods or services as social media presents. So I don't necessarily feel that there is a problem with treating yourself. However, if it's not done in a way that keeps that dictionary definition of self-care, being able to, you know, do things to help to improve your function in, you know, and sustain life and well-being, then those materialistic things can end up looking a little bit like the devil in sheep's clothing, so to speak. So they look like they're a good thing, but they can often lead you down the path into further burnout or misuse of your time, which then can increase other stresses as well. So mindfully engaging in what social media thinks is the idea of self-care is okay, but when it's done in an autopilot or an impulsive way, it can be quite damaging as well.
Yeah, like most things, it's a balance of treating yourself but not too much, like saying yes to some things but not everything. Yeah. It's just getting that balance in life so you can be like happy.
Well, sure, I completely agree.
How about you, Emily? What's your opinion on social media's perspective on self-care?
Yeah, I definitely agree with Chantal and what she had to say. Social media in a lot of ways can be quite detrimental to our mental health, to the way we see ourselves, and exactly what you were saying with the dictionary definition of self-care, it really is trying to make it look a bit evil to us, and we don't deserve to have this. Like, we shouldn't be going out and having facials every week and buying all these things that were advertised. But sometimes you do need to. You need to take time for yourself. You need to treat yourself. If you want to buy that dress. Like, it's going to make you feel better. It's going to help your overall health. And I think in the way that we do see social media in society definitely affects that. It is looked upon as a bit of a devil, I'd say.
Yeah. So you mentioned, I guess, Chantal, you mentioned that you can, I guess, go into the autopilot mode when it comes to, let's say, treating yourself. I guess I kind of resonate with that, because this year I've started watching Netflix, and now like every day it's just kind of autopilot me watching Netflix when I never used to watch it. But I guess I keep telling myself, oh, it's okay. Like, you need to relax. You need to look after yourself. But spending my time watching Netflix every day is not, I guess, a good way of using my spare time. Do you have any ways that you can, I guess, get off the bandwagon if you have turned on that autopilot?
Oh, that's such a great question. And I totally resonate with the Netflix addiction at this point in time as well. For me, I like lists. I'm a visual person. I like seeing things on paper. So an exercise that you can do, which can be rather in depth, or you can do it on a shorter time frame, would be the urgent important matrix. So writing everything down that you do in your day, whether you want to do it or not, or the things you'd like to do, and being able to rank them, whether they are urgent and important, so, and functioning in that zone is called the burnout zone, or whether they're important for progressing you towards your long-term goals, not so urgent, whether there's things that you can delegate, or whether there's things that are actually depleting you. And I guess not necessarily depleting you, but they're things that aren't necessarily moving you towards any goals at all. So that very well may be the Netflix or the chocolate bar or, scrolling Facebook, whatever it may be. The same principle as, working or engaging with material things, a little bit's never a problem. It's just when it's too much that it is. Maybe allocating time to address and mindfully interact with those activities would be something that I would be recommending. Asking that question, it's such a simple question, but as you go to sit on the couch and you turn on Chesapeake Shores, I just say, is this nourishing me or is this depleting me? And sometimes we need a rest to just veg out and watch the TV. And other times, rest is actually getting off the couch and going for a walk. It's re-energizing us in another way. And sometimes engaging in those autopilot activities are actually detracting from our energy levels rather than creating a new spark.
Yeah, definitely. I do feel that now. Like at the start, watching Netflix was like, I guess, recharging me. But now, because I've done it for so long, it doesn't recharge me. Thanks so much for, I guess, those tips. What about you, Emily? I don't know if you've fallen into Netflix bandwagon as we have, but...
No, I definitely have. The past few days, especially, I've been binging Squid Game and it's been very good. So I'd highly recommend that. But I'm definitely going to take some tips from Chantal. These great ideas and getting out and re-energizing yourself and recharging the outdoors is something I really kind of can relate to. I think it's a brilliant idea.
Yeah, I think that question of asking whether it's nourishing or depleting yourself, I think that's a really great question and something that's like such a little thing but could make such a big difference in like checking in with yourself.
Definitely. Yeah.
So we've all talked about how like it's really hard not to keep taking things on and keep saying yes to everything. But currently, like there's a big hustle culture. So there's a lot of promotion around like saying yes to everything and keep like pushing for success and keep aiming for more. So how do we like deal with that outside pressure of constantly striving for goals and trying to like do a heap of stuff, as well as like, yeah, self-regulating? So Chantal, do you have something to say about that?
To begin with, I would love to offer people the idea of a reframe in relation to saying yes. Sometimes we say yes because we feel like we're going to be letting people down, or a lot of the time we feel like we're going to be letting someone down, and it may show that we're weak or something along those lines. But if you're turning up to work suboptimally because you're burnt out, what's the risk associated with that? So quantity doesn't necessarily mean quality. So by taking one less shift and using it mindfully to be able to improve your overall well-being will make you more productive in your next shift, where you can, knock things out of the park, as opposed to having the scatterbrain and the lack of motivation and energy. So there's always a cost to saying yes, and the cost may be increased risk. I mean, we work in health, so that could be significant. one day. So always remember that, yes, it is for yourself, but there's probably something in it for the people that you're caring for as well. In relation to the hustle culture and the having to strive for more and more and more, I think we need to change the conversation. And this is something I'm super passionate about, but busy does not mean successful, and hustle doesn't mean powerful or superhuman. We need to start valuing rest, recovery, and relaxation as verbs that have equal value to hustle and grind and busy. And when we start looking at them to have the same value as those words that we kind of put on a pedestal at the moment, we then look at changing the nature of how we look at success. It all of a sudden looks more balanced, and we get people that have increased emotional intelligence that can then show up for a longer period of time in the way that they want to, fulfilling their purpose and their career for the long haul, as opposed to having increased sick days and disengagement at work, which can drag the whole team down. So by changing the conversation, and I think what you guys are doing is fantastic by putting a spotlight on this, is going to really help to just keep building that groundswell of treating people and considering ourselves as whole people, as opposed to just work life and home life separately. And we'll get holistic, better, more engaged teams that are going to change the social fabric of our professions, as well as the societies we live in as well.
I think that's like a fantastic perspective to put it in, being like, you need this time to self-care and to step back. So you can be more productive and work better if you have that balance between like resting and relaxation, and those being good things, as well as like working hard. I think that's fantastic. So Emily, how have you engaged in hustle culture?
Yeah, I could definitely not agree more with what Chantel has to say. That whole quality over quantity is so, so important, especially being in healthcare and from my perspective in the paramedicine fields. If you're not coming into a shift, being able to put your whole attention onto a patient, things can go severely wrong. You don't have the hospital behind you, doctors, nurses, allied health. You don't have people there to kind of back you up and to say, that's okay, we'll fix it. If something goes wrong, it can go direly wrong. So having time to self-care, to be rested, is going to help your patients immensely. And being a student as well, going to placement when you're not like on placement, you're working, you're doing classes, you feel it like to the extreme. I know I just recently did a block of placement, and every day that I wasn't on shift, I was at the hospital working or I was studying, and I was so tired for 2 weeks straight. By the end, I didn't know where anything was in the truck. I was like, what am I doing? I didn't think I'd be able to even talk to a patient. So having the time to feel ready, I think is super, super important.
Yeah, that's definitely very important then, especially like 2 weeks of like constant work sounds like a lot. So it's like, yeah, realizing you need to step back and be like, okay, I'll be more effective if I just like have a bit of time to like assess what's going on. So I think with that, that brings us to the end of the episode. So to conclude, maybe let's see if either of you have some like parting advice for our guests. So do you want to like start, Emily?
Definitely. I'd just say, you know, don't be afraid to say no if you need to. You're not going to look like a lesser person. You're not going to look like a less hard worker. You need to take time to make sure you're at your best self, so then you can put your whole self into helping others and doing your best work you can.
And from you, Chantel?
Thank you. Self-care and minimizing burnout to me is not about putting equal time values into each parts of our lives. It's about balancing the part where you're a little bit top heavy at one time or another in your life. So identify in a moment of peace what those re-energizing things look like for you, so that when things start to go into that autopilot mode, have a game plan ready to action before you need it. So it takes one less decision off your plate. But asking the question, does this nourish me or does this deplete me, will hold you in good stead for preventing burnout rather than having to cure it.
Yeah, I think that's all great advice that we can take on at any time in your life, whether you're a student or in the workforce. So yeah, thank you to both you, Emily and Chantel, for joining us today. Definitely like learned a lot about burnout and how to manage it. And it's been great talking to you both. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you. I've learned a lot being here, really. I'm going to take this into my everyday life and I think it's definitely going to help me. So thank you for having me.
And thank you as well. It's been thoroughly enjoyable and listening to Emily on the front line of the COVID pandemic, as well as balancing uni and placement, is next level. So congratulations that you're still going strong. Hopefully the end of the year goes well for you too.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, thank you.
To conclude the episode, we wish to acknowledge the people of the Kulin Nations on whose land we are gathered today. We pay our respects to the elders past, present and emerging. For those listening who may be based elsewhere, we pay our respects to the traditional owners of the land from wherever you may be listening from. We especially welcome any Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander people listening in today.